Hi, Aditi. Thank you so much. This is our second interview, and thank you so much for taking time out and doing this. It really means a lot to me.
Hey, Madhav. It's really glad to be here and, you know, talking again for your listeners and for, you know, for your podcast.
So, sometimes when you see these horrible crimes and horrible hate crimes, rather, how do you reconcile with them and how do you deal with those? Like, it's not merry all the time in your workspace, right? So how do you deal with those things, those days?
Well, crime beat is itself is not very, you know, pleasant beat to be, you know, talk about. There have been instances where, you know, you have to cover pretty gruesome crimes. For example, the recent Disha gang rape and murder case which occurred, it was pretty disturbing for me as well. Like, when we went to the crime scene and the protest and everything, there was a lot of hatred. And, you know, it's very hard to deal with it, thinking that, you know, okay, something like that has happened in my city and I'm reporting about it as well. And, you know, back of my head, okay, I'm doing my job, but something like that can happen to anyone. So, it is disturbing at times. And so, I usually, it's very, you know, what. Sometimes you just talk about it and talk to your boss about it that, you know, maybe I can do a little bit of, you know, something else rather than doing crime, covering crime beat for a few days. Like, after any heavy crime, beats or stories I cover, after that I take a break, like do a feature or maybe, you know, some other stories which is not very, you know, related to crime. So it takes my mind off the, you know, the whole incident. But it has also made me very cautious because you know all the details about the case. For example, the girl, when she was gang raped and murdered, the area where it happened, it's a main road. It's right behind the main road in the compound wall.
Yeah.
One of the days when I was coming back home, it was like, usually I come back home sometimes from my friend's place at night, 2 a.m., 3 a.m. It has never, you know, what we call, scared me before. But after that incident, I saw it from such close, you know, the incident has been, you know, reporting has been so close to my, the whole stories are very close to me. So it was like, you know, a small fear which I felt other day when I was coming back at night, 12:30 a.m. that, you know, oh shit, the person I'm coming with, I didn't even see his face. What if? But then again, I know
that's
the city.
Sad, but yeah.
Yes, it is sad, but that's when it clicked me that, you know, how I can manage to, you know, make myself safer with that incident, keeping in mind, because I spoke to the police, what could have been done? What could have been done better? By maybe the girl could have screamed or something like that would have happened, right? So I'm using those techniques as well. Like, you know, rather than going what the GPS map is showing him, I said that I know where the patrolling cars are, where the, you know, police patrolling happens. So I directed him the route accordingly.
You actually brought a very important point. Now, for our listeners, can you just quickly list a few things that you must have spoken to commissioners or police or something like that, which you were just mentioning that you've been discussing with the police and they have been telling you what could have been done better, or she would have screamed, or she could have done this, or for others, for next time onwards, any lady, any woman who's listening to this can try and put that into practice. Can you just help us out listing a few things that we can do?
So basically, this incident has made me realize that not every time everybody is available for you to help. And you have to have to help yourself.
Absolutely.
So you have to stop being a victim, thinking that, oh, what will I do if there are four persons and I'm alone? And rather, you have to practice your mind that how will I react rather than getting scared? How will I react? What can affect them? So what I read and what I spoke to commissioner and woman, she team head, all those people, like officials who are handling these cases, are that you have to practice over and over. I know it's a very hard thing to say, that being a woman, you have to be, you're unsafe, you're feeling unsafe in our country. But honestly, you cannot close your eyes and walk away thinking that, oh, people should come and help you.
Mm-hmm.
So,
true.
Yeah. So, first of all, you have to maintain that, you have to practice in your head. How will you react to a situation? If you're alone somewhere, practice. Like, how will you react? If somebody comes and touch you from behind, how your body should react in that way. Enough of being the victim. Nobody's going to come.
Yes.
Unless you reach out for help.
The fear needs to go.
So you have to dial that 100. Police is there to help, of course. But you have to dial that 100. You
right.
have to manage to dial that 100. You have to take out that time. You have to take out the time to dial that 100 and reach out for help.
True.
If after that nobody comes, yes, it is the authority's problem and cases, awareness should be, action should be raised against those officers.
Mm-hmm.
But somebody has to dial that 100 and it has to be the survivor itself. That's why
correct.
I'm not saying it's a victim. You have to be the survivor in the story.
Mm-hmm.
So, and also I realized that some few things which, you know, I was reading one article and I think I was speaking to a lot of senior officials as well who have psychologists who have interviewed these sex predators, is that how they target the victims.
Mm-hmm.
Victims who have who has a ponytail,
okay,
wearing a easy cloth which will be easy to remove.
Mm-hmm.
Who are not alert, like,
mm-hmm,
looking for their keys, listening to music, you know, their mind is diverted, so they know if they attack she won't be able to react to it. But if
okay.
you're alert,
okay,
so how do you become alert? If you're thinking that somebody is following you, stop and ask that person what is the time.
Hmm.
Suddenly he knows that you have seen his face.
Hmm.
And you're no more the favorite target for them. You understand?
Okay.
And if somebody is coming close to you, shout and scream. Say that stop right there. Scream, shout, so that they know that, okay, fine. Now I can't, come close to that person because scene create ho gaya, and, you know, now it's not a win-win situation for me. I can't get away with this.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So all these things, and honestly, car keys and all those things are not weapon. Pepper spray and all that, it takes some time.
Right.
So you have to know some of the, very weak point, like nose, elbow. You just put your elbow, hurt them with your elbow to their nose. Nose is it's gonna hurt them pretty badly.
Mm. Groin area.
Yeah. Okay. You have to do all those things. A few things so that you get the time to run and reach out for help. I know it's not the best of the advices, but I think that if you're on your own, this will help you and you have to practice.
No, I mean, small steps are the things that help you out, right?
True.
Definitely presence of mind. And I think back in the shipping days when I was in ships, we used to practice this fire drills every week.
Yes.
Drills. There were drills. There's nothing serious happening. But why should we practice it every week? So that we are tuned to it.
Yes.
Even in the night, if there is alarm, because the alarm can come at any time. So you are so used to it, you are just on your
feet. The panic time is very less than the usual time.
Yeah, you just react.
Yeah, you just react.
Your body automatically gets to that. So I think what you just said are methods of practice. People need to practice it, sort of.
Yes.
Self-defense or self-defense has always been one of the
self-defense, everything. It is the, you know, again, we are asking the victims or the survivors to be careful. I know that.
Mm-hmm.
But everything starts from home, honestly.
True.
Like, it's time that we talk about how men should be treated at home, or men should be, you know, put restrictions on men as well, much as they have put
where
on.
Where are you going?
Where are
what
you going?
Time
what
you
time
going?
Are you coming back?
Who are you going
Who
out
are,
with?
Not just those questions. Ask them to respect, show them how to respect women. Punish them if they are not respecting women. You have to do that.
Yeah.
The way you treat the woman in the house, they learn from that. How come, if you talk to some of the people, the way they say that, how come that girl was wearing her jeans and going out at night? How dare, they say. It's very confusing that, you know, how dare, as in, like, we have the equal rights. But not in theirs, you know, they have not seen women like that.
Yeah.
Their house, the women have always been at home, timid person who doesn't have a voice.
Yeah.
So suddenly, if they see a woman with a voice, that means she's a slut, she's easy, and she should be raped or murdered.
Yeah.
So it has to, like, after, just... You know, taking precautions will not help. It has to start from our home.
Absolutely. Thanks for these points. I know it's a little deviation from our interview, but nevertheless, they're very important points. So, in your professional life and your personal life, how important is family for you? And how do you deal with the stresses of your life in terms of dealing with your family on those bad days?
Well, one good thing is my husband and I both are journalists. So usually we, if there's something huge happening in the city, something really sad happened in the city, we both will know about it. So I don't have to give him any background.
Right.
So I just come back home and I see, oh God, you know what happened? And I just pour, you know, the whole stress out, and he'll be like, oh, even I was thinking you went all the way there to cover the story. How are you feeling and stuff? So I usually talk to him a lot about it.
Mm-hmm.
Apart from that, yes, I speak to my friends.
Right.
Tell them in both ways, like what I have covered and what I have found, you know, in this, what is wrong and right. We see the reality from so close that, you know, the day after whatever the newspaper publishes, it's like only a part of it.
Right.
But the feeling, how we felt going to the same crime spot or to the person we met. So those kind of things, we cannot publish it, right? So
emotions will not come out on the paper.
So those kind of emotions do come out when I'm talking to my friends, family, and especially my mom as well, because she has always taken, like, she has taken a lot of interest in how I cover my stories. She asks me doubts. She asks me how I'm feeling. Are you taking care of yourself? So it gives me a lot of encouragement that, you know, okay, you can talk to me about it. It's okay.
Mm.
Even if you're feeling stressed out.
That's wonderful.
So I have a lot of people around me to talk to. Bottling up won't help. So
you should not.
You should not. Just take
it out.
That's
the worst thing to do.
Yeah. So I know there are a lot of things, like, there have been days when I have mortuary duties. I have to go to mortuary and stand there for hours to find victims, family members to talk or check with the police what is the update on the case. And mortuary definitely is not very nice place, right? People are crying.
Definitely.
There are dead bodies, one after the other dead bodies coming, and you see that police officials are also very annoyed. Like, it's a mixed feeling with all, you know, all different kind of bad feelings altogether.
Mm-hmm.
So after usually my mortuary days, when I come, and after my work days, I usually be at home and watch something really funny. I don't want to end my day with something, watching something sad or talking to, you know, what we call about the work. So I usually take break on that day.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'll talk about it later maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And I just open maybe Kung Fu Panda or Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I just, you know, laugh it away. Okay, and it feels good that, yeah. See, not all the days are affecting you, like, very deeply, but it touches the surface and it goes every day.
Yes.
Like, every day you're going to cover stories, so it will touch some surface of your heart or some surface of your emotion, and it will just fly away. So those emotions you can, you know...
Fleeting emotions.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I think I speak about it, like, of course, speaking to family, I have to filter a lot of things. My mom gets scared that, oh, you went to the crime scene. This is the third time you're going. Why are you going there? That place is not safe.
Right.
So you have to filter a few things there. But yeah, she understands a lot of things. She understands my work as well. So it's easy for me to
share. She is a great
share.
Support.
Yes,
she has been
a support.
And moving on, in comparison with the older generation, like when they were 50s, 60s to now, the styles of reporting have changed. The nature of reportings have changed. Nature of reporting has changed. So, what if you were to quickly summarize the difference between journalism in 90s or 80s or 70s to 2020, 1920? How would you summarize it?
I think social media has played a very huge role in it. Like, how my vice dean in my college used to say that one time she was a crime journalist, and one time she had to just suddenly go and interview a footballer.
Right.
Okay, and she doesn't know anything about it. She doesn't even know how the person looks, because no Google that time, right? Now
right.
we can just search it on our way to, you know, to
interview,
give,
yeah.
for an interview. I'll just, you know, search it online. What is the, you know, what are the questions I have to do?
Right.
That time it used to be very difficult. So what she told me is that one of her friends, 12-year-old or 14-year-old, he was a huge fan of that footballer. She just went to his house, her friend's house, and she just spoke to the child.
Kid.
Yeah. Got all whatever information she could manage, and based out of that questions she made, and it was not bad interview.
Wow.
Yeah. So Jugaad used to be, you know, like that time phone, telephones and what we call speed. That was
absolutely
the issue.
Yes.
So today's generation is like all about who will get the news first rather than who will get the news correct, I'll say. That is also an issue.
That is also
today
an issue, yes.
So in 90s, 80s and 70s, they used, whatever used to get published, you could have trusted it because the information will come fully and then they will verify. The proofreading, the verification process used to be very tough. Before the story goes to the page, it used to, it has to be, you know,
thoroughly,
what you call,
checked.
Thoroughly checked, grammatically checked. Proofreading everything. Nowadays, it's all about who gets the information first.
And who
it's a competition,
it.
Yeah. So it sometimes buries the depth of the story. Like, there is no depth in the story,
mm-hmm.
just because you have to take out the story as soon as possible.
Right.
You just touch the surface and you just publish it. Or it's, you know, what we call some media organization don't even bother to verify, maybe. You see,
yeah, it's also a sad thing.
It's a WhatsApp journalism which has become
oh god, the WhatsApp. Moving on, how do you use social media for your in your life, like professionally and personally as well?
Well, I love my personal life, so I use it very in a limited time. Social media, usually Twitter, I feel that it boils my blood when I go to Twitter. So I have just stopped picking up fights and all that on Twitter. And I usually reply to people who are asking genuine questions. And
mm-hmm.
I have learned the art of not giving a damn about those people who are trying to troll you.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, there are a lot of like you get trolled for saying the right thing. You get trolled for putting up your opinion out there. And I realize that debating with some certain people on Twitter doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
You would rather
save it for something better. So yes, social media, of course, I have stopped using some of the social media platform, only publish my stories or the information, try to keep it neutral because that is, I feel, is the need of the hour.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than keeping your opinion and publishing something, you just say that this has happened. Let
right.
the people decide. I think I have learned to do that rather than keeping an opinion about it. Yes, if I have an opinion against something, I post about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't indulge into what we call debates. Unless a sensible person is
actually asking
a sensible question.
Which hardly happens, I'm pretty sure.
Yes.
Well, it was lovely chatting with you, Aditi. Thanks for joining again. This is the second part of our interview. And I hope we do again. I want to do this again and again. We can keep our discussions to our interviews.
Yes, we should find new topics to talk about.
Yes.
It was great having me here.
Thank you. Bye-bye.